Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast.
Welcome to the Serotalk Podcast, your portal to the accessible digital lifestyle.
www.serotalk.com.
A production of Serotech Corporation, makers of System Access, the System Access Mobile Network, and SA2Go. Learn about new technology, cool software, useful websites, education, information, entertainment, user comments, and much more. And now, here's your host, Jamie Pauls.
Welcome to Serotalk Podcast 166 for August 26th, 2013. I'm Jamie Pauls.
I'm Ricky Enger.
And I'm Joe Steingamp. And Jamie, the thrill is gone. The thrill is gone away.
What have you done?
I hit level 50 on Solara.
All good things must come to an end.
Actually,
it doesn't come to an end. You still have a bunch of stuff you can do, right?
I got quests. I've got arena stuff that I can do. There's all sorts of stuff I can still build. I made it to the final bits there, and it gets really interesting when you get to about level 47, and you have some interesting challenges. But yeah, I accidentally, and I do mean accidentally, got to level 50 because I was just kind of like, I'll put this guy here, and I'll put this guy here, and that worked really, 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 really well. I'm at 50, and all my guys are at 43, so I've got a long time to raise them up through the arena. But again, thank you for everyone who has said on Twitter or has left us emails, iReports, for coming along and playing with us on Solara. We have a pretty big group, actually, all kind of chiming in and helping each other out on tips and tricks on Serotalk and on our personal Twitter feeds.
We talk a little bit about Solara on Triple Click Home episode 21, which should be out very soon, probably about the same time as this podcast, actually. So go check out Serotalk, or actually go check out tripleclickhome.com episode 21. At the end of this podcast, I visit with Stephen Guerra, who is the secretary of the National Beep Ball Association. And we talk about this year's season, how things went, and kind of get into a little bit of the nuts and bolts of the organization and how the teams work and all that good stuff. So a really interesting interview with Stephen. So stick around for that after the news. Speaking of news, our good friends over at HIMSS Incorporated have released their promised update to the Braille Edge 40. You can do some really cool things like read DOCX files and RTF files in contracted Braille. You could read them in uncontracted Braille before, but now you can read them in contracted Braille. There's also some cool things about battery warnings that they've included to kind of keep you from losing your Bluetooth connectivity, as I understand it. And so definitely, if you are a Braille Edge user, go download that update. You just simply download a file to the root of the SD card and follow a couple real simple instructions and shouldn't be any problem at all.
If you use your HIMSS note taker, or maybe it's paired to a computer, you might be one of those people that uses it to read Twitter. And things are getting a little more interesting in terms of Twitter. Facebook earlier this year they announced an accessibility team that you can follow over at FB Access. And now Twitter has gotten together an accessibility team. We see this over on Marco Z's blog. And A11Y team is the Twitter username for this team. They're looking to do some really cool stuff, though. They've already made some improvements for Firefox, and you can also use some navigation keys, although you have to turn off the sort of virtual navigation on your screen reader in Windows in order to be able to use these. You can use J and K to move to the previous and next posts in your timeline, and a few other nifty little hotkeys as well.
And also, in the land of neatness and updates, the Nearby Explorer app for Android has been updated. It has such great things as fixes for version 4.3. For those of you running a Nexus or a Nexus device that is running Android 4.3. Also, along with that, you can do some more with the voices there. So if you are not a huge fan of the TalkBack voice, you now have some choices if you are running alternative synthesizers on board your Google device. The ability to turn off parking lot mode, and this is kind of a big one, I would imagine. The ability to use metric announcements. So I can imagine that those of you who don't really like North American standards must be thrilled now not to have to hear feet.
Now, no kidding.
Back to meters and kilometers and hectares and stuff like that. Right?
You will have reached your destination in 4 hectares.
Yes, yeah, that's it. That's my plan.
Yeah. My favorite story of all time is a little boy that a friend of mine was kind of keeping track of in the hospital when they were visiting a friend or someone. And she was like asking him every question she could think of. And at one point she said, "So how many feet are in a yard?" And he stopped and thought about it a minute. And he said, "Well, it depends on how many people there are."
Well, the dog is in the yard. There are two cats in the yard and two people outside. So
yeah.
How many paws fit into a meter? I'm not really sure.
I don't know.
So if you own a Nexus 7, you might want to get Nearby Explorer because it does work on that device as well as, of course, your Android phones. Although there were recently some issues with GPS on Nexus 7s, namely the newer hardware, as far as I know. There were also some issues with multi-touch. There is an update now that I'll probably never see until, you know, 2 years from now, because that's how things go with Google and me.
Yeah. Once again, I beat you to the update.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's lovely.
Guys just would have adopted Android earlier, you would have been just fine. What can I say?
Yes. I'm telling you, it knows that I have a couple of iPhones in the house, and it's like, no.
Fighting you.
But I'm curious about this update because the bug fixes, or the primary bug fixes that are mentioned here, only relate, as far as I know, to the newer Nexus 7 hardware and how it's interacting with the software. I don't know if there are any changes for the older Nexuses,
Nexi,
as far as multi-touch and Nexis
something.
Or GPS. Nexis?
Yeah, I like that too.
Yes, Nexis.
I don't know because I was not one of these people who had the "my Nexus is getting slower" problem. Mine's been running pretty good, and this update popped in, and I don't see anything gigantically different. But at the same time, maybe there's something that's working in the background with the new TalkBack beta, and I'm just not sure of that because I'm still running TalkBack production version from the Play Store. So as with most things in the mobile app world, it will change overnight. So it's a free update, so you'll be able to get it. And if you aren't familiar with Android, it'll show up in your notification bar. So it will say system update, and you can activate it from there. Or you can do what Ricky will be doing for the weekend, and that is going over to settings, then system, then checking update,
update. Yes. I really want this update because I have had some frustrating issues with multi-touch and just trying to do certain gestures and them not happening unless I'm holding the device exactly flat or, you know, whatever. And I don't know if this is going to fix that, but that is one of my biggest frustrations with the Nexus, is that it's just not consistent.
In the latest High Contrast, Rodney talks about Erin's frustrations with using TalkBack on the Nexus as well. And hers kind of mirrors some of the things you've talked about here on this very program.
Maybe those with slower Nexis can listen to the arrangement of Dolly Parton's Jolene slowed down by 25% that kind of hit Twitter this week. That was actually quite fascinating.
It was an EOL tweet, no less. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm curious as to how they did it because it was slowed down, you know, and pitch shifted or whatever, or we don't know if it was pitch shifted. It was, they were playing
F45 on a 33, I believe. But then how did the...
How are the vocals still in line and in the right key for the music?
I actually, when I took my Cavi class, kind of sort of part of the class and sort of informally, there was a discussion of Reaper and doing mashups and using some other tools. And the things that those guys can do is absolutely amazing as far as being able to slow tempos down, match tempos, shift pitches down without losing the quality of the sound. It's phenomenal, actually.
Wow.
If you follow Ricky and I on Twitter, we tweet songs back and forth to each other. And one last week was Korn and Taylor Swift. Two tastes I never thought would be good together. Somebody did Teen Spirit with Lady Gaga's Poker Face. And unfortunately, yeah. That actually sounds really good, too. That's...
I was my wife was shopping over at an area. Jamesport, Missouri is an Amish community, and they do a lot of touristy things. And she was shopping, and I was listening to this instrumental bluegrass music coming out of the speakers, and it was really good stuff. And I'm thinking, that's a really cool song. And then it dawned on me, it was the Eagles' "Take It Easy." It worked. I promise you, it worked.
Wow. Oh, yeah. That's great.
Oh, my gosh. Send in your crazy ideas about what works. In fact, in staff meeting, we actually talked about the Bob's Helter Skelter, which is another great one if you go out and find it. So if you have any crazy covers or things like that, let us know in an iReport or send it to us at resources@sarahtalk.com.
Speaking of things that might work, or we hope work, Joe, what about the new Galaxy watches that are coming out?
I think of Peter.
Nice colors.
I think of Peter Griffin and Family Guy. You know what grinds my gears? When Samsung comes out with a Galaxy Watch 4 days before Apple probably does. No, we don't know that for sure. But Samsung is coming out with the Galaxy Gear, which is to be an Android-based smartwatch that's going to have all these neat colors. And I have gone on record by saying I want a smartwatch, be it an iWatch or this or something. I just like the concept of it. And I grew up, you know, watching and reading Dick Tracy comics, reprints, not the originals. And I just think this is kind of neat. I don't have a Pebble, and I don't have a Fitbit, and I'm always curious about those, but we do seem to be coming to wearable technology, which I think is just absolutely amazing between this and Google Glass. And if I could just have something to interact with, so let's say it'd be, I don't know, it could work as NFC. So when I get close to my computer, it knows it's me and does certain things and activates certain things when I walk up to it. Totally fine with that because I don't always carry my phone or my phone always needs to be charged. And I probably won't have as much problems wearing a watch. No idea about how this is going to work and whether it uses apps from the Play Store yet. We'll know more on September 4th.
Weird colors, though.
Yeah, very, very strange colors, with apparently some very interesting names to come as well. I'm kind of interested that the iWatch rumors have gone away in favor of the champagne-colored iPhone 5S, which seems to be a really big deal this week at least.
The 5C is for champagne. Yeah, it was all about, there's going to be a gold iPhone.
It's for China. That's really what it is.
For China. Yeah. But no, nothing about Apple smartwatches, which makes me wonder, you know, were people watching some sort of supply chain and saying, oh, Apple gets parts from these people, so, you know, they're making the iWatch or whatever, whereas it turned out to be, oh, yeah, Samsung is, in fact, doing that.
Well, the watch has gone down, but the TV has come back up because of their purchase of Mancha and some other technologies. The idea that there's an Apple TV is rocketed back into the front lead of Apple rumors because we already kind of sort of know some things about the Apple 5C or 5 whatever. Of course, we'll know more about that on September 10th. And of course, you'll learn a lot more on Triple Click Home. But yeah, I think we're seeing that again where some rumors are coming back into play because of these acquisitions Apple's been making, not just on television, but on maps. They bought a couple of mobile apps to help them out with maps, supposedly for iOS 7. And Waze integration started to show up on Google Maps. So the whole...
Oh, really?
So you can actually get some information and alerts in Google Maps that come directly from Waze. So that acquisition has kind of started to work into the Google world of things. There was a Google Now update as well that just recently came out that allows a lot of crazy things. And we'll get into that on that Android show. But to give you an idea, you can get more than sports scores now. You can actually get the ability to buy tickets and you can actually have more with flight times. Some of the stuff that came out of the Gmail beta from March has started to work its way into Google Now.
The age-old debate continues between Apple and Android. Who's better at this? Who's better at that? Who's better at the other thing? And we have a review here talking about Siri versus the Android voice recognition. And this looks to be a really fair and balanced article. He talks about living with a Google phone and an iPhone for a couple of weeks and talking to both the phones at the same time so that, you know, there wouldn't be any differences in, well, I said it slightly this way that time and I may have said it differently this other time. And what he found was that both phones are not so great at dictation. So, you know, you're speaking a passage that you want to be converted to text. Both phones are not so great at that. Google really is ahead of the game on web searches, not surprisingly. You search for something, and of course, this is the thing that Google does, so it's pretty natural that it's going to be really great at that. Whereas Siri, not only does it have personality, which some people care about and some people don't, but it can be better at things like reserving restaurants and getting movie tickets and the like because of integration with
OpenTable.
OpenTable,
Fandango, and other right. services.
So, you know, each one has its thing that it does well, and each one has something that it could improve on a little bit.
I find myself speaking in a really strange sort of, when I'm doing dictation, if I'm not careful. You do that too?
Yes.
Like, I will be there soon.
And it's
like,
if you just
relax and talk, it does better.
Yeah, if you just spit out whatever, then it tends to do well. But I'm always, I don't know why, I would like to be there, period.
Yeah.
And then it just comes up with something really silly.
My yeah. mom feels like she has to go 5 octaves up and 3 times louder.
Hey, yeah. Siri!
Yes, exactly. That is so, you know, just to do navigation. And it's like,
yeah,
wow, mom, it's a pretty sensitive microphone there, but okay. But yeah, people do that. It's like they pulled up to like Jack in a Box and was ordering tacos or something. You know,
I'd like a reservation for 7 p.m.
And
you totally.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah,
that's right.
That's how Siri comes
totally
back.
You totally overmodulated
right?
the mic, yeah. and it just
Siri comes gets back, ready. And it's like in a large orange drink, right?
Is right.
Well, what it won't do is necessarily bend in all sorts of crazy ways, and that is actually one of many patents. Apple just went nuts with patents again last week. In that this one that we have here in the show notes over at serotalk.com talks about a hinge that's kind of bendable. So if you've seen any number of these really mind-boggling Windows 8 flip them and set them upside down kind of laptops, and I'm looking at you, Lenovo Yoga, or some of the really strange ones that are coming out of Acer where you kind of flip it in kind of a sideways way. Dell has a really strange one too, where it has the hinge on the corner. Everybody's trying to give you the ability of best of both worlds. So you have a keyboard here, but hey, if I flip this over and slide this go gadget keyboard, and then it becomes a tablet. And Apple seems to have an idea about making this better, possibly on a future MacBook or other technology.
Yeah, really reduce the thickness of the MacBook Air, for example, which is thicker at the back than it is at the front because of
right.
the hinge. So how thin does a MacBook Air need to be, I wonder, actually. But hey.
It has to fit in a manila envelope or vanilla envelope, something like
no,
that.
No, it
we
is
saw
vanilla.
That before. Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, or vanilla is, yeah. I don't think, do they have flavored adhesives?
A vanilla
adhesives?
Envelope would be delicious.
That'd be nice.
Oh,
yeah.
God.
Be awesome.
Now that even, like, go patent that. They also
so
patent
you can cut
some
your hand
things,
on your new thin
air. Yeah.
A manila wafer. No, wait, a vanilla wafer. There we go. He's wafer.
I was unboxing my air, and I had to go to the emergency room because I sliced my hand open.
Yes,
and it was so thin.
Cut me. Where's that in my Apple Care? I didn't see that.
AppleCare introduces new health plan.
Yeah. No, I'm staying away from those stories. The other thing that they patented last week was multi-touch and working with proximity sensor. So think about what the Galaxy S does with the whole hold your finger like barely in front of the phone and you can activate buttons by just kind of sort of hovering there. This is you make some crazy moves in the air, like say connect. And by doing these moves in the air, the proximity sensor detects these movements and actually will activate some things. May never, ever show up in a product, but it's definitely something about UIs and gesture support. And maybe we're back to that Apple TV and that you use the phone in a way to wave it around and make the Apple TV do stuff. That's been theorized before, too.
One thing that's definitely showed up is a new education section on Apple.com. They do a great job with the education setting. I know I've mentioned before that the students at the school where I do some music therapy are really making great use of the iPad. And it's interesting, apparently there are even in-app, I don't know if they're purchases, but downloads, like if a student manages to accomplish some tasks that maybe they can actually get another add-on to the app, that sort of thing.
Wow, neat.
That's really pretty cool. Yeah. But again, Apple is doing great work with education and that whole area.
Another thing Apple has done is to make iWork, the iCloud version, available now. Before, it was just available to developers and certain select accounts, but you can go check it out. It is still in beta, by the way, so be aware that there may be some issues. If you have iWork on your Mac, then you're going to be able to check this out. They did make the point that, you know, a lot of people don't actually have iWork at all. It's a, you know, they're paid apps in the App Store, so a lot of people may not have this, but you can access this stuff through a web browser on Windows as well. So that's kind of an interesting thing to check out.
Woohoo! And unlike Safari, it might work in Windows. Wait. I'm sorry.
Yeah, Safari plus Windows equals bad.
Yeah. Okay, I'm putting that down as a show title, possibly. It's that one I like a lot. But again, for those people who don't have a Mac and they want to participate in being an advocate for accessibility, this is a perfect opportunity. And for those who are looking for an alternative to Google Docs, this may also be something you want to take a look at.
We shall see. I'm skeptical about anything these days that tries to be a word processor on the web, just because generally it doesn't work so well. Although I have been impressed. Go Microsoft with Office 365. You can get access to the web apps, as well as, of course, having them as desktop clients. And I haven't done anything super heavy, but hey, guess what? I can, view and edit things, which is a step above some other options out there.
Jamie and I are just going back in time to use WordStar.
That's it. WordStar, WordPerfect 5.1.
Ooh, 5.1.
Yeah. That sort of thing.
Yeah, back in time.
Or perhaps exactly what that sounded like when I was using WordPerfect 5.1 with Vocalize.
Oh, wow. Brings back some memories, doesn't it?
It does.
Or perhaps you could just capture a phrase, a bit of conversation that you like, that you want to keep forever. The Horizons for the Blind group has done a review of an app called Herd that will do just that. Basically, it records 12 seconds of time and then loops. That's the free version, or up to 5 minutes if you want to pay for the app, which is not very expensive. There are some voiceover issues, however, that would make the app a little difficult to use. Doesn't sound like anything that couldn't be overcome if the developers are interested and if someone talks to them about, you know, making some more voiceover friendly changes. So if you think that really rare bit of wonderful conversation needs to be kept for posterity, you might check out this app. Personally, I tend to like to forget what comes out of my mouth.
That's about right.
Shortly. Yeah.
Patrick and Derek will remind us come January with our outtakes.
Yes.
Yes. I could have used this the other day when randomly my cats meowed in harmony, and I wish I had had a recording going because it was such cool. A good sound.
Your kitty glee club, is that what you're saying?
Yes, apparently. I'm curious about how this works, though, because I don't know if you can have it running as a background app, because essentially it's recording all the time, and then at the end of 5 minutes, it loops again, and, you know. You
drain your battery.
Well, actually, that was referenced in the article, and they said, no, it really doesn't. It's not as much of a battery drain as you would think.
Apparently, it does interrupt some notification alerts, which was also talked about, the fact that
like if you get a text message or a push notification.
That, of course, we might, but yeah.
Yeah.
Instagram for audio, 12 seconds to 15.
Oh, hey, yeah, you can have audio vines or whatever. Yeah. I don't know what you'd call that, but.
Something other than audio boo, or yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, there we go. One of the neat things that came out in the Stem Stumper update last, about 2 weeks ago, probably by the time this podcast comes out, is the ability to actually do demonstrations and videos with VoiceOver running from the Stem Stumper app. So if you already have Anuncia's great fantastical game, Stem Stumper, and have heard the interview with Quasi from last month, by the way, Sarah Talk, 150 something.
Talk about going back in time.
Yeah, so like back in time. Anyway, my ability to recite numbers was jinxed by Jamie saying that. It was in my head when I was trying to remember numbers. If you go back in time and listen to that podcast of 161, there it is, you'll be able to hear Quasi's interview about an upcoming game. And, you know, we've talked about Solera and I associate on high contrast. One of the things that the AI revolution has brought us is we have a game machine, literally a gaming machine in the hands of all sorts of people from the App Store. And more audio games are popping up every day, either it be the resurgence of some of the old classic games on the Mac or somebody actually doing some more through audiogames.net. This article that we have here about inclusiveness in games is very interesting and it's very long, so I'm not going to paraphrase here. But there are some great resources, and if you're into audio games or if you know people who are into the development of games, have them take a look at this particular story right here in saratalk.com.
We've talked a lot about audio things, actually, so why not talk about audio books or maybe read as somebody else talks about audio books? We actually have an interview with Donald Katz, who is CEO of Audible. This is a really, really long written interview, but I highly encourage you to go and read it, even if you don't care about Audible or books in general or any of that, because so much of what is touched on in this article is really, really fascinating in terms of, I mean, there are all sorts of things that are covered, like how writing itself has changed based on the evolution of technology. You know, you move from a pen to a manual typewriter to a Selectric to doing everything on the computer. And he also touches on how Audible publishers may not have been so enamored with Audible, but similar things have happened as far as there was opposition to paperback books and even music. You know, the music business has been around for quite some time, and it used to be if you bought music, you were actually buying scores, you know, printed sheets of music. And you had the money to buy those things if you had the money to buy a piano or whatever instrument that you played it on. And then, of course, here comes Edison and says, hey, we should record some of this stuff. And there was huge opposition to that. But it was opened up music to the masses in a way that hadn't really been done before. So these and many other fascinating things covered in this interview with Donald Katz.
Coming up after the break, we'll find out why some people in Redmont have their countdown clock set. Jamie's going to find out about ambient noises, and Ricky's going to explain to you how you can actually just strike someone dead with a sentence. All that and more on Sarah Talk 166 after the break.
Looking for a cross-platform solution to quickly convert printed materials and PDFs into text, MP3, or DAISY formats? Check out Cerotech's DocuScan Plus. For just $299, use DocuScan Plus on your Windows or Mac computer. Store documents in the cloud for easy retrieval and access them from anywhere. For more information, visit www.docuscanplus.com.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Cerotalk 166. And as blind people who use technology, which I would have to put all of us in this particular podcast directly in that category, we get to play with some interesting stuff and have to look at interesting stuff and get to play with stuff that isn't completely ready for the public and is all broken and stuff. And well, we get to play with all sorts of things and it can be very interesting. And we've got an article here that actually explains a little bit more from a different point of view. Hey, Ricky?
Right. This is an article from Lucy Grieco, and she teaches technology, you know, sort of as her day job. So it's something that she is into, but it's not necessarily something that she is obsessed about. And she brings a perspective to this that I find very interesting. For one thing, when she's testing sites as part of her day job, one of the things that she would recommend to developers is table navigation. And then she has to stop and think that not everybody knows how to do table navigation. There are people who really don't know their screen readers. And so while this thing is technically accessible, is it really usable by the majority of the audience that you're targeting? And at what point do you say, you know, hey, audience, go learn your screen reader because this conforms to standards? And at what point do you say, this is kind of a usability issue and it doesn't work with the skill set of the people that you're targeting? She also talks about things like getting new ovens or stoves or things like that, and the challenge in finding something that is accessible, because a lot of places you can't get hands-on with this stuff. You can look at manuals all you want, but it's difficult to tell what something's going to be like unless you can put your hands on the thing. And that is becoming more and more an issue when shopping for technology. A lot of other great points here as well. Definitely check out this article in the show notes at cerotalk.com.
Well, speaking of technology and blind people, Ricky, you used a phrase at the beginning of the podcast, A11Y.
Yes, I did.
We have an editorial from Blind Bargains suggesting that that phrase be eradicated because it means absolutely nothing. For anyone who doesn't know, by the way, A11Y is a shorthand for accessibility, and it's used on Twitter. The idea being that from the letter A to the letter Y, there are 11 letters remaining. First of all, I want to know who came up with this in the first place.
I know.
At a bar at CSUN. Bah!
A bar at Seaside.
Hey, man, I just realized.
There's 11 of them, dude.
So, like, this one goes to 11. Like, oh, yeah.
We can totally make this a hashtag. Oh my God.
Well, what I was kind of impressed with was that Blind Bargains retweeted some comments, both positive and negative, and it's surprising how many people like a 11Y and want to keep it. Don't you dare get rid of that. No.
I think it has had a tremendous adoption rate for whatever reason. I guess because it's, you know, a four-letter word. I don't know. It's people just really seem to jump on this. And for me, Jamie, you really kind of made my point as you were introducing this story, because you had to stop and you had to explain. What A11Y meant. And this is mentioned in the article too. If you have to stop and explain what something is for someone, it is not inherently accessible, you know, to a large audience. And so it does almost feel cliquish in a way to have this hashtag that those in the know what it means. But when you're trying to have a discussion with a wider audience about something that important, you really don't want to have a barrier to entry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And exclusivity. I've whined on Twitter and here on the podcast before about being careful using the word accessibility. It is not a blindness exclusive term. And unfortunately, sometimes you will see people online or elsewhere tend to consider that accessibility is an overarching term for access for that particular disability. And that can be a bit of an issue because accessibility can be used in a lot of ways. Access to podcasts, technically, that, you know, how do I access a podcast? What is the accessibility ability of the ability to do the podcast, the things that you do so well? I don't like this term. I've never liked this term. I think I've been on record here about saying that I'm not a big fan of that particular hashtag. One of the ones that came out of the discussions that you mentioned, Jamie, was UAccess, universal access. As long as Apple doesn't own universal access, I think we're okay. But that I at least like a little better because it's kind of, you know, independent in that it's individual access, UAccess. I kind of sort of like that in a marketing sort of way, but I've never liked this hashtag because when working with muggles or people who are not in the echo chamber or people who are not familiar with accessibility, it just doesn't make any sense to them. And you do end up having to explain the hashtag, which slows everything down. And I'm all about saving, you know, 140 characters when you can, but, you know, TBC. I just
make a bunch of grammar mistakes instead.
Yeah, I just don't know that I care for this particular this just drives me nuts, and I don't know why. I can't really put my finger on it, but I've just not been a big fan of this label for a long time.
Right. So I guess the trick now is to find an alternate, just like you said, possibly UAccess.
Yeah.
It's going to be people adopting something else. Is really probably what it's going to come down to.
And a lot of Blind Bargains is coming to the party, but there have been a couple other people who've said this recently and on other blogs and places. And of course, I've been yelling about it for a couple of years, which is nothing new for me. I have pet peeves a mile long, but it's neat to see that this is a discussion now. As opposed to being just kind of something that happens at conferences where we kind of sort of talk about it. But, you know, nothing ever makes it to a certain point. But it's good to get users involved because if it is something that somebody finds very easy to search for, that, you know, works for them. But, you know, at the same time, there are some things that we search for. Like, okay, let's give a perfect example. If we search for iBlink Radio on Twitter, we just type in iBlink on Twitter. Hashtag or no, we're going to get song lyrics.
Yes, this is just a nightmare. So I blink twice. I don't know what that
song is. I don't know where that's from.
I don't know, but it gets quoted a lot.
Yeah. So, you know, you're going to have some form of people, you know, skewing your results no matter which tag you use. Even with A11Y, if you're looking specifically for blindness accessibility, you're not going to find it. You're going to find general accessibility there. So, then again, it's not meeting your needs if you're looking for something specific. I don't know. It's somebody smarter than me will probably come up with something better, and I will probably adopt that. So there we go.
So someone needs to get behind the wheel and drive in a different direction, perhaps?
Wow, that was stunningly good. Yes, absolutely. Yes. I think that is a perfect way of looking at it because, as we've talked about on Zero Talk a couple of times before, it's going to take the masses to get behind something before we can really enjoy some of the benefits of technology. In this particular article about self-driving cars, this talks about the adoption rate and how some people are just going to hold on to this like the dial-up rotary phone because it's what they know. They're absolutely definitely
or
afraid.
Windows XP.
Yeah, there's that too. And I talked about Kill Decision a couple of podcasts back, and this article kind of touches on some of the fears I had about what people would think or say about autonomous vehicles. And what do you guys think after reading this article? Does this make you feel positive or negative about the ability one day for us to have cars that we can just get behind the wheel and tell it go?
I still want it to happen, but I thought of something after reading this article that I hadn't really considered before, and it was kind of talking about, oh no, you'll have to pry the steering wheel out of my cold fingers, and how people didn't want to give up that control. And I started thinking there really is a lot of control freak kind of issues in terms of driving, because you see people who get behind the wheel and they are intoxicated, but they insist that they can drive. You know, this is my right to drive, and I insist that I can do it.
True.
People who get older or people who begin losing their vision will have a really large sense of denial about that, and they will want to hold on to that ability to drive long past when it is safe for them or anybody else. So people like driving. They like having that control. And I think that having autonomous vehicles can make at least some of those things way safer, but I don't know if people are going to go for it.
Jamie?
Yeah, well, there's a country song called Shut Up and Drive that is now going around and around in my head. And so this is therefore making it difficult for me to think of anything else. But actually, I'm like you, Ricky. I actually want this to happen, and I think it will happen. Probably not sooner rather than later, but at some point it will happen. Kind of like accessible currency. It may not be in my lifetime, but it's gonna eventually happen.
It'll happen.
No, it'll all be on your cell phone. It'll all be digital, and you'll be putting your thumb all over your iPhone. That's you know, because they're biometrics and all of that.
That's what it is.
The love affair with the American car, it's been something that we've had for a long time. My father was a race car driver and a mechanic and a service manager at a Chevrolet dealership, so automobiles have been in my family focus for a long time. And being that I live in Texas and the grocery store can sometimes be like just 9 miles down the street, you live in your car in Texas in some cases, depending where you live.
Yeah.
And it becomes a part of your identity. So cars mean a lot. But I'm also reminded of some AM talk shows here in Texas that was very good back in the 80s of reminding us that driving was a privilege, not a right. And I think there's some misunderstandings there as well. And Ricky, your point about when to give the keys up, there is, I think it's in High Contrast 6, Maury tells that story about her family having to sit down and have an intervention. And I've unfortunately been involved in a lot of those in my times in rehab for that very reason. And it is difficult. It is a passing of the torch, a moment of mortality. And so because so much is tied to the car and the love affair of the car in America, and then you see something like the Tesla S getting the best safety rating ever, but there are some people who just can't get their brain around driving an electric car.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of moyes that have to be worked all the way down. And I come back to what Jeff Bishop has said on Twitter several times, and I still agree with this, which is until we know what the insurance rates are like, I'm not sure what happens. You know, mm-hmm. and that's going to be the bigger part of this, is not the upkeep, not the gas. It's to insure the doggone thing.
Well, if there's one thing that is for certain, it is that things will change at some point. And this is especially true for Microsoft. Looks CEO Steve Ballmer will be retiring in the next year. And man, has this gotten Twitter all a flutter this morning as we record this.
Even rated higher or almost as high as Ben Affleck becoming Batman.
Yeah.
Almost as high as. That's just really sad.
Ben Affleck is a little bit more trendier than Steve Ballmer. Mm. Darn.
Who knew? Yeah. Well, you can always listen to the song that some Twitter individual who shall not be named, because I'll start cursing him, sent us about Steve Ballmer saying, developers. Yeah. It went into this remix and it really hurt my brain. But back to the actual story. Yeah, little Stevie Ballmer is moving on somewhere else. We don't know where. But he is hoping to transition out of this role within the next year. So Bill Gates and, of course, other board members are involved in this search. They're going to be looking within Microsoft as well as maybe wanting to poach somebody from outside the company.
Rim. No.
Rim, yes.
Oh, you think Thorsten Hines is going to come
work
for Microsoft?
You sure? Why not? Okay. I got a couple of questions. Here we go. Number one, Ricky.
Yeah.
Will Ballmer be gone before they give up Surface RT as a viable platform? Yes or no?
No.
Okay.
No, that's going to happen after he's gone.
Okay. Jamie, Will yes. Balmer be gone before Windows 8.2?
No.
No? Okay. All right.
No.
All right. Not a problem. All right. I'll throw this open to the group. Will Balmer be gone before the Apple TV?
Oh. Oh, wow.
Right at you, Xbox One. Right at you. Yeah.
We need Buddy Brandon here to make a prediction on that.
So that way we'll be wrong.
You know, we could be swayed the other way.
That's right.
And utterly wrong. Wow.
Good questions.
That is crazy. But I mean, certainly the market has changed in such a way. And there have been people calling for Balmer's head for years. In fact, there was even, I think, a URL, bringmethedheadofstevebalmer.com. I really think that this will really put a lot of people into put up or shut up mode, because you're not going to have Balmer to kick around anymore. Mm-hmm. So now what the problem of Microsoft is blank, right? That's yeah. what you're going to see in John C. Dvorak columns for the next 6 months. there are people who are going to say sell off the entertainment division, which has been a cry before. And Sony had the same thing and actually just voted that down. When you look at, say, something like Netflix, which is at 260-something by the time of this recording, and Microsoft is sitting on the stock exchange at 31 to 34, that's hard to believe, right? Mm-hmm. So the same thing happens when people look at Apple at like lower 500s and Google almost near 900. You know, how do you evaluate a company? How do you look at where that goes? And, you know, at the end of the day, some stockholders really want that to be up there with those other guys. So, you know, what can you do to make us like them is probably what's going to happen. And, of course, the other thing is when you're an old company like Microsoft, you become a blue chip. You just rock solid. You're IBM. You're just yeah. putting up the numbers, and you're just not cool in the same way that an Apple is cool.
Mm. Well, apparently someone that's pretty cool most of the time is Tim Cook. He's a pretty nice guy, according to this article, except that he can just throw out a one-liner or a sentence that can kind of make you want to go crawl under the table. You know, you present an idea, and he says, that's not good enough. And that's the end of that.
I wonder where you picked that up from.
Yeah. Go home, kids.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder where you got that.
Well, this is great, though, because he basically just sits there and takes it all in with, you know, poker face, like, yeah. I'm going to see what you do next. And that can be, I can see how that can be very intimidating and in a totally different way than the sort of tantrum throwing CEOs that are
who out fire
there.
You during a conference call at AOL?
Yes, like that.
Who he apologized later, but still, dude, that's like trash right there in front of everyone. Get your stuff. Just get out. Just go.
Just get out. Yeah, that's I like Tim's style better. He can still be really cutting, which, you know, at times is necessary, but it's in a much more low-key way.
Apparently he kind of like rocks back and forth while he's thinking, and they can like watch his body motion and figure out when he's getting ready to talk. This is really kind of yeah. weird, actually. Talk about keeping your eye on the boss.
He's slowing down. He's about
to
blow.
There's red smoke coming out of his ears.
No, no. What happens, it's Apple. What happens is he inflates a beach ball and it says iTunes busy is what happens. And Tim Cook busy. And then he comes in and says something.
Tim Cook ready, and then he talks.
That's right. With Alex.
That's right. Yeah,
right.
Nice,
that's
nice
how you know.
With Alex, yeah. Yeah.
Oh, no, no, wait. Pardon me. That's what he does.
Excuse me. Tim Cook needs your attention.
The voice of Alex at a board meeting.
That's correct.
Nah, I hadn't thought of that possibility.
I may have done some testing on 10.9. Anyway, more about that after September 10th.
Coming up after the break, we have noise in our podcast, and Ricky's going to tell us why she may or may not be super successful right here on the Sarah Talk podcast.
All right, class, let's hear what everyone did this weekend. Jill?
Well, I raised my older sister to a big oak tree. It was at least 100 years old. My mom said I must have set a record or something. And then we went down by a stream and perched up on this huge rock and saw all these little minnows swimming around way below us. And then I rescued my little brother from an evil slug king who was guarding him at the bush fortress. And my sister and I brought him back to our super twig fort for safety. And then we all laid out and told stories until it got dark. And the Big Dipper led us all the way home.
Whoa! Awesome.
Where were you, Jill?
Yeah.
We went to the forest. It's not that far away. Anyone want to come this weekend?
Ask your parents to take you and your friends to the forest this week and find the fun, adventurous you. It's closer than you think. Check out discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No. Sorry. Try again.
Oh, I don't know how to use this Apple thing. The only thing I know how to do with it is...
Wait, there's lots more to learn, and Mac for the Blind can teach you. As an Apple-certified support professional in Lion and Mountain Lion, with 8 years' experience on Mac and 4 years' experience on iOS, TripleClick Home's own John Panarese has what it takes to get you comfortable and productive with all your Apple gadgets. Training packages are available for both Mac and iDevices. When you're ready to take a taste of all that your Apple can do, visit www.macfortheblind.com to get started.
MacfortheBlind.com.
Welcome back to Sarah Talk Podcast 166, and I had a really rough job this week. I had to go pick up all of the mailbag pieces that fell out of the balloon that we used last week. So we're not doing that anymore.
We're not doing that anymore.
The mailbag is on the ground where it belongs. So.
Plus, I thought I was never going to come down to the ground again. So, yeah.
Never let me
never
down.
Doing that again.
Never come back to the ground. Yeah, okay. Never. Sorry.
I don't want to come back down from this cloud. Ground. Wait, yeah. No, I do.
Well, if you keep mentioning clouds, then it's just going to turn into Rolling Stones quotes. Keep going. It's okay.
No. Get off my... Okay. Moving quickly onward.
Moving right along.
We have mail.
You've got mail.
And no that's themes a good yet. Thing.
Yeah.
No themes. Come on, people. Give us a mailbag.
Yeah, we need a theme.
We really want one.
Acapella. We'll take that, too.
Yep. That's all right. If you want to just kind of chant the mailbag theme, we will take that too. Meanwhile, we do have mail to share. And the first one is a blog post from James. And he says, I'm legally blind and have severe cerebral palsy. I bought the Kindle, but I had to return it because I didn't have any way of reading my Bookshare books or reading any commercial books with text-to-speech. So now he has a Samsung Android and he can read Bookshare books and, you know, public domain books and the like, but he's still having an issue reading commercial books with text-to-speech and is wondering if anybody has some ideas for this for a low vision user or somebody who wants to read with speech on Android. And this one, I'm not sure about because Google Books used to work really well and now maybe not so much. You have Read2Go, of course, GoRead on right. Android for Bookshare things. But I don't think, there is one that Steve Nutt mentioned and it's Moon something?
Oh, Moon Reader Pro. Yeah, Moon Reader
Pro. Moon Reader Pro, thank you. That Steve really likes, and this may be a thing to try out for you, James.
And definitely, even if you don't go through all the podcast audio, go take a look at our show notes at thatandroidshow.com, because the conversation there might actually spark you to go try some of these apps. But you really should, if you get a chance, listen to the audios, because Anna and Steve and JJ do great reviews. Byron, too. Byron's kind of come on almost all our shows here lately. And, you know, there's some great content there, some overviews. Anna's gone over gestures. We've had questions about email. The biggest question that we usually got about how do I play X movie or X format, I did that with MX Player in July. So there's a lot of great content over there on That Android Show, and that will help you as well. Of course, you can also listen to that on iBlink Radio, which is available on iOS and Android.
Yay! Next up, we have a blog post from Riley Blake, and he is talking about episode 164 and mentions, I've never had a chance to pet a tiger or anything like that, but I did want to talk about the comment regarding the Seeing Eye GPS and Blind Square, and that was in response to an eye report by, I believe, Lynn Tatum. And Lynn believed that Blind Square was more valuable, and Riley disagrees. He says that it was really useful for navigating his neighborhood, and he's hoping for more features in the Seeing Eye GPS in the future. So great to have choices. Some people prefer one, some people prefer the other, and some people use an interesting combination of both. So
location,
that's kind of cool.
Location, location.
That's right. Developers,
that's right. But if you know some places, like initially when Apple Maps came out, it worked really good around Cupertino. Go fig, right? Yeah. And there were certain parts of the UK that it did not. And then you know, maps aren't built in a day, and it took Google years, and millions of dollars in Street View and all of that to get what they've got. And Apple is catching up. They're buying companies and apps all the time to make it better. In fact, you'll see some really neat stuff when we get to iOS 7 next month with maps. So there's a lot of interesting stuff that's coming, and a lot of it sometimes does mean, just like with screen readers, not one screen reader rules them all. So you may have to use, system access here or JAWS there or NVDA here, because not everybody's going to be able to do everything as well. And it's no surprise that that happens in mobiles.
Last, we have an iReport from Aaliyah Dudley, and she is talking about interfacing exercise equipment and phones.
Hello, Zero Talk. This is Aaliyah Dudley, calling with a comment on Zero Talk 165. I, in the beginning of the podcast, was a bit intrigued about your comment that you would use an iPhone or Android app to access an exercise system. And I have to respectfully disagree, because not everyone has iPhones, and I think that it makes a point to society, to manufacturers, to have, if you say yes, it will take an iPhone app, makes a point to manufacturers that maybe iPhone or Android apps is all they need, and maybe somebody with a smartphone then could not access the same equipment. So just my thoughts. Wonderful podcast, as always. We're dedicated nerds, so love it. Keep up the good work, and have a good one.
So this is a really interesting discussion, and I don't know that anybody has the answers, because when we talk about a manufacturer making something accessible, we first have to define what that means, because something that is accessible to us may not be usable at all to someone with a different disability or using this equipment in a different situation. And so in my mind, it's challenging for manufacturers to incorporate accessibility when there aren't any clear guidelines to say this is what universal accessibility means. And I get your point that not everyone is going to have an iPhone or an Android device. But for those people who do have those devices, they have a method of using them accessibly for them. And that's why I think that, at least in some situations, it really does make the ideal interface, because people are approaching it from, hey, I already know how to use this device. I've configured it for what my specific accessibility needs are. And now I can interface with other things, regardless of whether the manufacturer has thought about my particular use case or not.
And I don't think we were advocating for mobiles or iPods or what have you in general being the only way. Right. I think that was in addition to, and that's consistent with what we've said about the Kindle app. We don't want to be shoved down a cattle chute of, hey, you want to read some books? Go get yourself that Kindle app on iOS only.
And not Android. No, yeah. Never Android.
That's not what we're about here. We've never kind of sort of been that way. I think it was more of a, hey, you know what would be cool? But I will go on to say that with smart glass, with what you're seeing in Chromecast, what you're seeing with Apple TV and Mirror Ring and other things with AirPlay, the world is moving to a big black slab of plastic and glass as your remote.
It's a mainstream thing to do this, to interface that way.
And so, in fact, thinking of remotes, if you followed the NFB and the IBTC and some of the things that have happened over the years of just trying to get standardization in TV remotes, which sort of never, ever happened, that's part of the reasoning of why they're asking for this survey, why they're wanting input. But, you know, if there's a way to make something accessible in an app and you can have a general design that says that this button is going to generally be here and you can access it with this technology consistently, that's still a pretty compelling thing for me rather than memorizing 55 different buttons for 55 different manufacturers or having to go to the web to figure it out. That's, I mean, I hear what you're saying. I don't disagree, but I think the world is moving in that direction, and that's what we were kind of sort of alluding to.
Resources at sarotalk.com to send us your email. Go to sarotalk.com and check out our show notes, and while you're there, leave a comment on our blog. We would love to hear from you. If you go to iTunes, be sure and rate the podcast while you're over there. You can leave us an iReport on iBlink Radio using either your iOS or Android device. Remember, twitter.com/sarotalk to follow our Twitter feed and find out what just may be on the upcoming podcast. By no means everything that we tweet is going to wind up on the podcast, but a good bit of it does. It's time now for Roundabout. This first article talks about ways to be productive, and it seems like we've been kind of on a theme of that here during this podcast for sure, and even the last couple podcasts. This article talks about three ambient noise apps that might help you be more productive. I haven't really ever thought about I'll take that back. I have thought about it. I've never really known quite what to look for. There are three apps. One of them is called Ambience. Apparently, it's the oldest one.
Awesome app.
I need to play with that.
Oh, you have this.
I do. And they're constantly adding new sounds to it. In fact, you'll get a notification that'll pop up and say 10 new sounds have been added. And it could be rain on a tin roof, or it could be monster truck show, or it could be just all sorts of crazy stuff.
Relaxing sounds of monster truck show.
Oh, it reminds me of the old BBC sound effects records from the 80s when you would order them and get like freaking 50 vinyl records of awesome, awesome sound effects from the BBC library. But these are well recorded in stereo, some high professional recordings, some almost not binaural, but pretty nice soundscapes in stereo. And I like Ambience a lot. You have to pay for the kind of themes that you want, but considering that, you know, the old environment CDs, if you go back to those with forest sounds and stuff like that, there was an environmental series. Those were like $20, $25 back then. So paying just a little bit for like, $3 to have this on your iPhone is not so bad.
Another one is called Thunder Space that apparently does really focus on
Thunder Spaced.
You've
been Thunder Spaced. What's interesting about all of these, there's another one that is specific to like coffee shop sounds.
Yes.
Because, people have supposedly, we get more creative when
we're sitting at Starbucks all day
shop.
Leeching off their Wi-Fi.
Yeah, basically. And if it sounds like a coffee shop, then you better have a cup of coffee, not just any cup of coffee, but it better smell like Starbucks nearby just to capture the whole thing. But the point of this article that I think maybe we've glossed over so far is that there have been studies saying that ambience really can help with creativity. And it's just a matter of what your ambience is. But they've found that working in total silence can be a little detrimental to your creativity or your productivity. If you've got some noise that makes you feel relaxed or upbeat or whatever, then and that's what these apps aim to do.
I like my ambience with a little bit of pretentiousness, please. Coffee shop and
Yeah, it shouldn't smell like a coffee shop. It should smell like a, you know, the place where you walk in and there are like 14 different types of water that you can have. Yes, this exists. I'm thinking of a particular seafood restaurant here in Charlotte where they really do, you know,
would you like to see our water list? Oh, good.
It is like that. Oh, I kid you not.
Wow.
Wow. Again, I'm looking for some pretension.
I want mine cold,
worst
please.
Ambience ever.
Yes. So I'll probably be downloading Ambience for sure. And,
yeah, it's free. It's free to hear the samples, but costs money to buy the actual recordings. And works with VoiceOver. Use it. It's kind of neat. I actually use it in demos when I'm out doing presentations for Sarotech and somebody asks me, what cool apps are there out there to play with that are good with VoiceOver? And that actually sits in my demos folder.
Nice.
There are some people who will not be demoing this app or any other on their smartphone because they don't have one. Namely, Warren Buffett is totally against the cell phone thing. The owner of the New York Mets is not into computers or cell phones or the like. And we have an article here detailing several people who are extremely successful and do not want or like technology. The one I found most fascinating was the chairman of an IT company.
Yes.
Who banned email in the company. Yes. Oh, no, we don't want email. It is too distracting. You either text people or you call them. You're in an IT company?
Yeah,
right. No email.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I'm trying to figure out how Sarotech would function without email. I'm not liking this thought at all.
I can answer that quickly. We would not.
Right. Right.
Matt, can you see if we have some carrier pigeons? Can you?
It would be horrible, though, especially, and I don't mean this to sound as antisocial and misanthropic as it probably will, but, you know, calling people, seriously, it is not efficient. To do that, there are some things that are just better translated through writing and can happen a little more quickly that way. When you call somebody, there's always a little back and forth. How you doing? How you been? Oh, I had this other thing that I remembered that I needed to tell you, blah, 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 blah. And that to me can be way more distracting than email.
Mm-hmm. I've watched media companies, heads of media companies, and I've read their biographies or read articles on them, and I think that, wow, we could make that job accessible going back to my Voc Rehab days because this guy dictated his email. He had it read to him.
Wow.
And then he would dictate the answer back to his practical court stenographer secretary who would then go and data entry that back to somebody else like it was the steno pool or something.
And actually, speaking of courts and stenographers and the like, the Supreme Court justices made it onto this list. Nope, we don't use emails. We have, you know, the court's chamber aides come and deliver memos back and forth to us.
Yes.
Well, why should I be surprised? Because practically every technology lawsuit happens in East Texas for kind of the same reason. So we done got all them telephone wires up the other day. We used to use Dixie cups and string.
So, sure, bring them technophile things over here. Mm-hmm. We know all about it.
I'll tell you all about that thing.
Mm-hmm. Senator Arlen Specter referred to receiving a computer letter once, which was an email.
Oh, no.
From the series of pipes and tubes.
Yeah. But Simon Cowell doesn't use technology. Now, that one surprised me a little. That one surprised me.
Because he doesn't know how,
right.
Apparently.
Right.
But he's an excellent driver. I've seen him on Top Gear. So,
well, I'm wondering if he's looking at a computer with Windows and going, "This interface is just terrible."
Yeah.
Mr. Gates, I don't know what you were thinking.
Well, Bill O'Reilly says he doesn't. I can't figure out if he's serious or if he's just being self-deprecating.
Yeah.
I kind of think he might be telling the truth, but I don't know for sure.
Simon Cowell giving commentary on Johnny Ives, that would be...
Oh,
Caddy.
That delivery was just horrid.
I don't get flat icons. I just don't. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Wow. Well, we could ask Tim Cook if he's not busy. Has the beach ball gone away? We could.
Tim Cook busy. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, okay. We'll come back later.
Busy. Busy. Yeah.
I'm just going to force a restart. Don't make me.
Right. Well, we're not going to reboot this podcast just yet because we have my interview with Stephen Guerra, and you definitely do not want to miss that. He's a great guy to talk to. If you know Stephen at all, he's full of energy and he's a lot of fun to visit with. We talk about beep baseball and getting hit with one occasionally. Does happen, yes. So that's probably why I don't play beep baseball, maybe. I don't like pain at all.
This podcast has everything from beach balls to beep balls.
Oh, man. I tell you,
nice.
We cover the bases, including coffee, which now I want one.
Wow. You made that look easy. No more Tom Merritt for you.
Right.
He's the transition king today.
You. Thank you, Tom. By the way, if you listen to Mac Break Weekly for last week, Leo Laporte stops in the middle of the podcast and says, "This is the most boring Apple rumor cycle I can remember ever."
Just if you've had any issues with 165 or 164, let me just come right out and agree with Leo. Let me just
yeah, pretty much.
When the news is slow, it stinks, guys. This is. Oh, it's terrible. That's really
it
terrible.
Is rough.
Come on, September 10th or the 4th. Yeah,
bring it on.
October 18th. We need news.
We do. Resources at sarotalk.com, iReports, lots of ways to get a hold of us. Again, after the interview, Patrick will tell you exactly how you can contact us. Until next time, have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Well, this week on the Sarotalk podcast, I'm joined by Stephen Guerra, who's going to talk with us about the National Beep Ball Association. So, Stephen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Jamie. Appreciate it. Longtime fan of the Sarotalk podcast and just have always enjoyed you guys' content.
Well, thank you. You've done a lot of great work yourself. You've had one of the things you do are podcasts for independent living aides, and you make me want to buy everything that you talk about. So I guess that's kind of the idea, right?
Only so much money is available to do that.
This is true, but at least I can make a nice long list anyway.
Yeah.
So that's good. Well, of course, all work and no play is not a good thing, and definitely you are a sports fan. Tell us about NBBA and how you got involved with it.
National Beep Baseball Association has been around certainly longer than I have been involved. First was created, the actual organization was created in 1976. The first Beep Baseball World Series was in the fall or September of 1975 here in the St. Paul area. But the organization since 1976 has been in existence. We just celebrated our 38th World Series. And moving forward, you know, the sport is growing, has been growing right along since I took office as secretary for the national organization. I've been involved myself with beep baseball with more recreational teams and unorganized teams for competitive reasons since 1988. I became involved with the national organization back in 2000, in the fall of 2000. And I started attending the board meetings that they had in the fall and spring and such. And I really started taking an interest on the grand level with the big picture as to how the organization was running so I can learn and I can get involved on a national level to not only improve the sport but also improve the organization. But primarily starting with the Long Island Bombers back in 1997, bringing them to their first national tournament or first World Series for that matter in 2002. And then when I moved and transplanted myself from New York to Minnesota, where I am now, in 2008, I began and transformed the recreational team of the Minnesota Fighting Lions to now being the Minnesota Millers. And we've just completed our fourth World Series, which in this World Series in 2013 was in Columbus, Georgia. And it was a fun event. It was a great event.
For anyone who might not know, how does beep baseball work?
Well, it's primarily played by those who are blind and or visually impaired. It's not any other discipline outside of that is certainly welcome, but they will certainly have challenges because the game is entirely based on sound. No sight is required or no sight is encouraged to be used. Everyone on the field the field of play, the six players on the field are blindfolded, as is everyone who is at bat. to level the playing field so no one has a distinct advantage, whether you have partial sight or no sight. Obviously, having no sight, you don't have any advantage unless you can come up with a miracle at the very moment. However,
right.
The ball is a 16-ounce softball. It's about 5 inches in circumference. It has a beeping mechanism inside of it that's built into it. It emits a rapid beep. And that, plus the bases that emit a solid tone beep, make the game possible. So with each team, unlike regular traditional baseball as we know it, on your own team, you have your own pitcher and catcher. The name of the game, obviously, is the higher the ERA, or earned run average, the better the pitcher will be, and the better you will have chances of excelling and being at the top of the heap when it comes to the championship game, which is at the end of the week of the World Series. But so essentially, your pitcher is pitching to the area where you're swinging, and the name of the game is contact. You hit the ball, the pitch ball. And then it becomes a foot race between you and the defense. You're running to the base, and the defense is running to the spot on the field where the ball has landed or has stopped, or if it's even stopped at all. And you try to do that all within about a 6 seconds period of time. The base is 100 feet down the third and first base lines. And again, they're situated 10 feet in foul territory. So you're not running onto the field of play itself, so you're not going to – hopefully there's going to be an avoidance of a collision between you and the fielder. The name of the game for the fielder is to pick up the ball before you get to that base. If they do that, it's an out. If you get to the base before the fielder picks up the ball and shows clean possession, then it's a run for your team. Each batter is given 4 strikes and 1 take, a 1 pass ball. And the important part, which is interesting for – most people to try to, they have a difficult time wrapping their head around, is that the pitcher stands 20 feet from the front of home plate. So, you know, when you're pitching a 16-ounce ball and you have a person swinging a bat between 32 and 38 ounces and the ball comes back at the pitcher, there's very little time for that pitcher to react, to either get out of the way or they're going to get hit with the ball. And there were several instances this year that the pitcher got hit with the ball, and thankfully no one sustained any injuries. But it is a dangerous situation, and it is a risk of the sport.
Mm-hmm. So talk about this season. Who actually made it into the World Series, and who won?
Well, there's no qualifications other than you paying your World Series registration fee to come to the World Series. Okay. We had 20 teams this year from all over the United States and Taiwan who came to the World Series, which is the most since 1986, where we had 22 teams then in Palo Alto. But this year in Columbus, we had 20 teams, and they went from as far south from Houston to as far north as Minneapolis, St. Paul, to as far west as the Tucson, the Southwest Slammers out of Tucson, Arizona. There is a team that did not make it this year from Stockton, California, named the California Rays. And then we're going as far east as either as far northeast as Boston, as far southeast as Columbus, Georgia. So we had teams from all over the country, plus a team from Taiwan who came over. And we started on Tuesday with a round-robin play where all the teams from the previous year get seeded. And everyone plays 3 games on Tuesday. And depending on the amount of teams that play in the round-robin, then determines to how many games you play on Tuesday. And then you go into the championship part of the tournament that started on Wednesday. And you go all the way through. The two teams, like in 2012, that played in the championship game this year were Taiwan versus Austin. I recall from a previous show, I believe it was show 163, where you guys spoke about the Austin Blackhawks going back to the World Series this year, and they were vying for the championship position and to beat Taiwan finally, and they were unsuccessful this year.
Okay. Now that was kind of an interesting story because they actually taught the Taiwanese how to play. Is that correct?
Yeah, they were a group that went over and make no mistake, you know, the Austin Blackhawks have a well-defined champion group where during the 1990s, they put together and strung together 7 world championships in a row. Mm-hmm. So back in 1996, I believe it was, they went over to a group of people from Austin Blackhawks went over to Taiwan, and they showed them the intricacies of the sport. And then Taiwan started coming to the World Series in 1997. It really wasn't until 2004 that they won a championship in Columbus, Ohio. But yes, in essence, Austin did teach him to play B baseball, and now I'm sure they're wondering if maybe they taught him too well.
That's great, though. That's excellent.
I want to also go on to say about Kevin Simpson, the pitcher from the Austin Blackhawks, has been their pitcher for quite some time, at least 20 years plus. Mm. And he really is the ideal pitcher for that team and has, in a lot of different instances, brought that team from where they were taking over the last 10 years, third, fourth, fifth, sixth place, something like that, where they've been in a championship game the last 2 years. And it really, they get hungrier and hungrier each year. Mm-hmm. And they're going to, at some point, get to the point of being champions.
Right.
We just don't know when it's going to be, but when it happens, it's going to be a tremendous party because it's going to be a tough fought battle.
So when do players begin in the year and how long does it go?
The season generally starts depending on the part of the country. You know, I believe the mm-hmm. Southwest Slammers will practice right along and through December because they're blessed with some warmer weather than what they are here in Minnesota or mm-hmm. even for that matter in the Northeast. But generally, we would say March 1st through the time of the World Series. And there are some teams that go on. I'll give you an example. This weekend, every year over the last several years, the Chicago Comets, who took fifth place this year, take part in an event down in Columbus, Georgia called Midnight Express. And it's an event put on by Scott Resmeyer and Country's Barbecue down in Columbus, Georgia. And it brings awareness to the community for and about the blind. And all the proceeds and funds that are raised from that go to directly back into the community for the blind, whether that in most recently, I believe the funds from last year's event was able to purchase for Columbus State University there in Georgia, a Braille printer so they could provide Braille documents for the students on campus who are using Braille. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a lot of community reinvestment by that event. And it starts off on Thursday night with a blind golf outing, which is, I believe, done at night or in the dark. And then Friday night, there's a beat baseball game in the dark. And then on Saturday night, they have the midnight run where the people run 5K or something, but it's all done in the dark and or blindfold with people who are blindfolded. It's a great event. It's been going on for many, many years. So it allowed Columbus, Georgia to prepare well in advance for hosting the 2013 World Series for all the 400 plus people who came in from the National B Baseball Association. And it was, you know, it was a fun tournament. It was because of that community involvement and because of the awareness that the community is of the blind and the visually impaired, it made our tournament even more successful this year.
If a person wanted to get involved with beat baseball, how would they go about it? Or would they start to learn about or get some information?
They can visit our website at www.mbba.org, and you'll find that link as part of your show notes. And there are links all throughout the homepage that will allow you to see the teams of the league. For 2013, there are 27 teams registered, only 20 of which came to the World Series. But there is information there on the teams page that allows people to learn on how to start a team or to find a team in their area, to make contact with them by email or even for that matter by phone. But you can directly go to mbba.org/teams.
Okay. Well, Stephen, I'd like to thank you for taking time to visit with us today. It has been quite interesting, and I suspect people are going to want to know more. As you said, go to sarotalk.com, check out our show notes, or just go directly to the National Beatball Association's homepage. For the Sarotalk podcast, this is Jamie Pauls.
You've been listening to Sarotalk. Visit us at www.sarotalk.com. Send us an email at resources@sarotalk.com. Send us an iReport with iBlink Radio, available in the Apple App Store and the Android Market. Or leave a voicemail at 866-997-BLAB. That's 2522. We may read your email or play your voicemail in the next podcast. Join us next week as we explore all that life and the internet have to offer. Until then, may you have an accessible digital life. We'll be right back.